Time now for the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Dan Wetzel.
Ohio State's ranked second. Good job. Way to go, Bucks.
Pete Thamel.
I actually think Sean Wade's dad is going to go to New York and protest them not being number one.
And SI's Pat Forty.
You know what it'll do? It will lead to the other college football national pastime, which is complaining and comparing theoreticals. That's what everybody will do.
And here's Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. It is Monday, just after noon. The Associated Press released a top 25 poll, boys.
Woo! How about that?
What is this nonsense? What?
How many asterisks are in it?
Ohio State's ranked second. Good job. Way to go, right. Bucks.
High point of the season for them.
21 people voted for him first place. They're not playing. What?
I actually think Sean Wade's dad is going to go to New York and protest them not being number one.
That'll be next.
He just called a press conference, and 17 people have quoted him. And Randy Wade is outside the Associated Press offices. Wondering why the Buckeyes aren't number one.
The traveling band of Big Ten parents is moving on. Yes, to AP headquarters.
I don't understand. Like, I know this is a time of the year, and every 4 year, everyone should vote. We should value every American's right to vote. Let's vote. Count the votes. Vote for your guy. Whoever your person is, vote for him. I don't care. But why the hell would you vote for Ohio State? They're not playing.
Makes no sense to me.
Am I going to vote for, I don't know, like Mitt Romney for president or something? Or like, he's not in the election.
The only thing that is consistent about this is that it's every bit as meaningless as every other preseason poll we've ever done in college football, because it's all based on speculation. Well, they could have been good.
You know, somewhere someone's getting a bonus off of this, though. There's always a bonus.
Did UConn get
Randy
any votes?
Edsel's getting one for not being ranked.
Yeah. Did UConn get any votes?
He might have like tried to split the $2,000 with like the guy from the Hartford Current. Like, dude. Vote us at 25. You can use my beach house down the Connecticut Sound. Just saying. And if you don't think those offers don't happen, you're kidding yourself. I'll read the whole thing.
Yeah.
Clemson's number one, 38 first place votes. Ohio State got 21. They're in second. Alabama's third. They have two. I don't know where the 21 goes. We need like an electoral college in here. They may be ranked. Electoral college. Red state is number 21. Blue state is 23. Yeah.
Electoral college versus College of Cardinals. Some point in here.
Yeah. Where's the electoral college? Alabama's three. Georgia is four, but they're really three. Oklahoma is 5/4. LSU is 6/5.
They got a number one vote. How about that?
Seven. Yeah. LSU got a vote. Florida is 8/6. Oregon is 9. Notre Dame is 10/7. Let's see if I can keep this up. I need like an abacus.
Yeah. Yeah.
Auburn is 11/8.
Wisconsin Last week it was all the 12. Science classes you didn't take. This week it's all the math classes you didn't take.
I'm trying, man. Don't interrupt me while I'm thinking. Texas A&M is 13/9. Texas is 14/10. Oklahoma State is 15/11. Michigan is 16/12, but that doesn't count. USC, all right, now
Michigan's
we're at
16/out.
SC is 17/out. Okay, North Carolina is 18/12. Minnesota's 19th. Cincinnati is 20/13. UCF is 21/14.
And still complaining they're underrated.
Utah is in there at 22. So now we're eight. Was I at seven or eight? Eight. Mm-hmm. If I get this right, Iowa State is 23/15. Iowa's out. And then Tennessee is 25/16. This is tougher than that thing that Trump had to pass. I don't know if I got it right, and I ain't saying I'm smarter than him. I'm just saying, woman, man, whatever, camera, that's right. Try that. Try that. I don't think either presidential candidate could handle that thing.
My biggest complaint on this poll is, how isn't Memphis ranked? Like, they're so much better than some of these teams. The polls are most biased against the non-Power 5 teams every year. It's been that way since, like, Boise would go undefeated and have this miraculous season. They'd start the next year 19th. And you'd just be like, or is anyone even paying attention? Like, Memphis returns, obviously, they have one of the best tailbacks in the country, one of the best receivers in the country. Brady White's there for his, like, seventh year as the starting quarterback after he transferred from Arizona State. I just, like, don't understand that. Now, they have a new coach, which means they have a new play caller, and Mike Norvell is great, but, like, they're loaded. I don't get that.
The only thing that's a bigger farce than the fact that teams like that don't get ranked is the fact that we have teams ranked who aren't playing.
Sorry, I was trying to talk about football. We're actually entering the portion of the podcast again where I get looked down upon by Dan for actually talking, wanting to talk about football.
I wasn't going to agree with
players,
you.
Personnel. Like,
I just handled the AP poll. Don't try to, you know, don't step on my game right now. I'm still basking in the glory of pulling that off. I agree with you. Memphis should be ranked higher. That I don't get that one. I go back to those old Boise State teams. Like, no one would look at they always go, Boise just overachieves. They don't have that much talent. Like, there was one year they had like six draft picks, and like Kellen Moore wasn't one of them. And he was a great quarterback. And like, you look at a mock draft, and there'd be, you know, six, seven guys ready to go for Boise State. Like, that's not talent. I don't know.
Boise's got plenty of guys in the NFL now and has for the last decade.
Yeah. Like, it looks like some talent. They're not just a bunch of, you know, 180-pound potato farming kids on that team. I'm not really sure where you think this operation recruits, but it ain't the Snake River Valley.
No.
Appalachian State in there. So let's see. So if we're at 16 and Memphis goes to 17, Virginia Tech goes to 18, Boise State's not playing, Arizona State's not playing, Miami is 19. Way to go, you. Mm-hmm. You back in the top 20, sort of. Louisville is 20th. App State is playing, right?
Yep.
21. Washington's out. Kentucky's 22.
Yep.
Indiana, your big chance. Sorry. Boom. Out. Baylor is 23. Cal, nope. TCU is 24. And Virginia is 25.
How about that?
And Navy, Florida State, SMU, Mississippi State, Air Force, and Northwestern, UAB rounds it out. Here we are.
Here we are.
Top 25 is now basically like, what, 40% of who's playing? Yeah, something close to that, about a third.
Here's the breakdown is, right. No, that's why 16, I think, is actually perfect, because it's 60% of 25, and we've got 60% of the conferences playing. So you may see something to that effect coming at SI.com. You're still standing 16.
Stuart Mandel, Buzzy, friend at The Athletic, just tweeted out what September 12th would have looked like. We would have number 2 Ohio State at number 9 Oregon, 11 Auburn versus UNC, number 18, number 14 Texas at number 6 LSU, number 23 Iowa State, and 24 Iowa doing that Cyhawk thing, Bush Light Bowl. 25 Tennessee, if they hadn't been upset early by whatever bye game they had, would have played at number 5 Oklahoma. Damn, September 12th was looking good.
Yep.
That really angers me.
Instead, we'll get like 4 ACC games, I think, that day now. Something like that.
Well, nope. I'll take it.
Yeah. Hey, it would be football if we get there, if we get it.
Yeah, I'm excited for Miami UAB on that Thursday, September 10th. I'm excited for all of it. Let me say that first of all. But like, Miami UAB is really good. UAB should good be game. In the
UAB drastic. Was like 9-5 last year and got almost everybody back. I don't know.
Yeah, they're gonna have a salty defense, and don't sleep on old Bill Clark. Like, let's put it that way. UAB is like made the daily deposits to earn a little preseason hype the past three seasons. The old U,
yep.
Like, that's a lot of, like, transfer promise. Maybe this guy, best player on their roster, just scooted Russo, the defensive end.
Yep.
He obviously had, like, 15 sacks last year. Classic Drew Rosenhaus, local poach. Get him to the league, tuck him away. So, I don't know. I'm just, after watching the overt disaster that was Miami last year, I'm just not ready to like sprinkle some fairy dust on them and say they're going to compete for the ACC title.
They're getting the recruits.
Yes.
They're
coming. Who haven't arrived yet.
And haven't signed even.
Yes.
They are verbally, Miami's rolling. I thought Kentucky would be better. I thought Kentucky would be ranked higher. Maybe I'm the only one that high on Kentucky.
I like Kentucky.
Pat, are people excited about Kentucky? I thought.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we're high on Kentucky. Slam that +7.5 going into week one against Auburn. Looking tasty. Head to BetMGM.
Where's the game?
Sully is very bullish on the Cats.
The game is at Auburn, but who cares?
But there's no home field advantage anymore. So
that's true. I have to stop asking that.
Well, there'd be 20,000 fans or something, right?
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. Everybody keeps downsizing their fans. You know, the Kentucky Derby is now down to zero. They went from, you know, the usual 150 to, well, we think we can do 75. That was in June, I think, or maybe May. And then it's like, I still think we can do 50. And then about a month ago, 24. That's what we're going to go with, 24. And then Friday, we will have no fans.
Do you remember the story out of Italy from early in the pandemic that they thought the super spreading event in Northern Italy was a soccer game?
Yeah.
Yeah. That just scares me. Like, I think about that every time I see one of these, like, we're at this percent, we're at this percent, we're going to do this every time. I just think about that. Like, oh, my God. Like, just don't let that happen. You know, like, right. don't let the whatever game. Because not only is it the stands, and the obviously stands were packed at the soccer game, they're not going to be packed here, but it's the bars and the places, like, allowing tailgating. That's insane to me.
See, I disagree. Yeah. I think you can spread out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, didn't we talk about this last time?
Yeah, we did.
I don't think the tailgate's that big. I agree with the packed stadium is ridiculous. And those soccer teams sing the whole game.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Fans, so it's like a choir practice with 80,000. Not a good idea.
Yeah. There's a lot of aerosol being emitted from those people.
Yeah. You do not want choir.
Not much different, though, than A&M and their fake army.
No, it's not.
But you spread them out. I don't know. I probably would just not even try because – it's like if I was running an athletic department, it just seems like an immense amount of effort for a small crowd. But I don't know. I guess there's people want to pay to see it. I do not think the tailgate is going to be that big of a deal. I think it's going to be a lot like when people, it sounds bad when everyone goes to the beach, but if you go to the beach, you see everyone's kind of spread out.
Yeah.
That's just my take. You're not going to see me at the, maybe. I the closest game to me is like Notre Dame. I don't know if they're going to make it. I really think Notre Dame to me is going to be really interesting. I think one thing that we've seen and one thing we were all told back in the spring was like, if there aren't students on campus, there's no way, right?
Oh, yeah. Among those who said that was Notre Dame's athletic director, by the way.
Right. A lot of people said that, too. And he said it out loud. A lot of these is a lot of athletic directors and campus leaders and conference people that were hiding. They don't want to say the truth.
Right.
And then it was, well, maybe we could. Now it's like maybe we could do it. Right. But I wonder what Notre Dame does because they're having some upticks, which, again, I think a lot of this stuff is I don't want to speak directly to Notre Dame because I don't know. But I think there's a bait and switch move here by these schools. And all your money and then we blame having to shut down based on your behavior, which is, of course, entirely predictable behavior.
Sure.
So it's like, well, we had to shut down because you students wouldn't stop partying. And to me, that's not that's a plan, but that plan had no, if the bar to shut down was some number of students getting it, that wasn't going to work. So you get to Notre Dame. The service academies, three service academies, Stanford and Notre Dame to me, try harder, certainly service academies, but Notre Dame and Stanford too, try hardest to have their players be regular students. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not painting this thing in a golden dome, but you have to live in a dorm. You have to take real class. Like they do as good of a job as you can possibly do. A lot of other places just pretend. So if you're Notre Dame, do you quit sooner because you're, you know, if they shut down the dorms, you're out? Or do you build off the goodwill of, you sort of have some built up goodwill of like, hey, we really tried, but for this year only, team's going to a hotel. Or we're going to isolate, we're going to create a, some, Or do you think Notre Dame just quits first? Because if you're honest, this isn't going to work if you're putting kids in a dorm. And if they shut the dorms down, you probably shouldn't have a football team. At least on that, if that's your thinking, you got to shut it down. Or does Notre Dame say, yeah, we're going to be completely hypocritical here, but consider all the goodwill we've done. We try the hardest. Let's play. What do you think?
Great question. And yeah, that's their thing. Like, they're freshmen. Not everybody lives in dorms, but they're freshmen all do, and they all have roommates who are not football players. And that's where you're all of a sudden, you cannot bubble that.
What's Brooks' term? NARP?
NARPs, non-athletic regular people.
Yeah, I love that term. Can't get enough NARPs. Sorry to cut you off.
No, that's all right. So every Notre Dame freshman football player lives with a NARP. And the NARPs have been the bigger problem so far. They've had some positive tests on the football team. But you have to fundamentally alter your approach to save football. And do they want to do that? It's a great question. I'll say this much. Everything Notre Dame has showed me so far is they really want to play football, because they could have shut down the whole campus. They decided not to, and maybe that was a whole campus decision, but they stopped football practice for 2 or 3 days, but they were back at it Saturday. There are no classes in person on campus. There is no extracurricular activities for students. There's no student organizations meeting, none of that. But there is football practice, and that tells me they really want to play. And I think they would make whatever adjustments they feel like they could passably get by the faculty and some concerned alums. Some other concerned alums would be like, hell yeah, go for it.
So Friday, Saturday, you know, people were texting, calling, what's going to happen at Notre Dame? What's going to happen at Notre Dame? So I made a few calls over the weekend about Notre Dame just to see what the appetite there was and the appetite of the ACC. If we had to pick the least likely of the three conferences remaining to have an appetite to push through some bad optics, it would be the ACC. It wouldn't even be close. Like, the Big 12, quite frankly, has been even more bullish on playing, I think, than the SEC, which has been fairly bullish. And just by reputation and, quite frankly, by geographic political affiliation, those leagues you would think would be most dead set on playing. Well, the ACC ain't slowing down. Like, that was made very clear to me when I made some phone calls this weekend. Like, this little blip in Raleigh and in Chapel Hill and in South Bend, optics are not going to shut down this college football season. That's probably the biggest takeaway I had from my calls this weekend, which, by the way, was just like a gloriously quiet news weekend. Like, there was just like the D1 ticker that I think we all read every day, which does a great job bringing you through the headlines. It read like a local college police scanner. It was like, party at Holy Cross. They shut down at Holy Cross. Like, you know, students gathering on the quad at Syracuse and they're shut down there. Like, that was the accumulation of quote unquote news for this weekend. But like, the ACC is finally showing it's a football league. Remember in New York, they used to have that joke about being a true Yankee. Like, was A-Rod a true Yankee? Well, like, the ACC showing it's a true conference by just plowing through these optics and acting like their other brethren.
This is what I wrote last Thursday on that subject. Is the ACC might be going from the SEC and Big 12 sidekick in the Big Three leagues to the most willing to push forward towards kickoff. The Clemsonization of the conference may be complete. Tim Beray didn't appreciate that line. Our friend Tim Beray was the longtime excellent SID at Clemson, and a great guy. Love him. But he took exception to that. He doesn't like any form of Clemson as a verb. He didn't like Clemsoning back when that was a term, and he did not like Clemsonization. But my point was exactly what you said, Pete, that this is now a league that's thinking very aggressively about football, and it's not been that league in the past.
Yeah, no more SEC light.
It was interesting to pick up the Boston Globe on Sunday, and like the banner headline across the front is a column by Dan Shaughnessy, and it was like, BC should not play this fall, and it went through the list like all the reasons, and it wasn't like the greatest column in the world, but it was just like an interesting, like, that was like the lone cry for the like shutdown compared to like the actual tenor within the league, which was like, let's forge ahead.
So what was your thought on Notre Dame? Are they the first to pull, or they're all in?
They seem all in, Dan. You know, like, yeah. It'll be interesting. Like, this has not shaken Notre Dame. Let's put it that way. They obviously went on pause and did the right things, and I don't want to say they're being cavalier, but you would have thought the campus shutting, you know, 2 months ago, we would have sat here and said, oh, if they have an outbreak and the campus shuts down, forget about it. They're done. And that just hasn't happened. That's just not the case. And so when you look back, like, at the columns that were written with some gloom and doom tied to them. They were tied to like the set of facts where we all assumed what the, you know, Bob Bowlsby and the Jack Swarbrick said out loud, which was if there's no students on campus. Because look, UNC and NC State are not going to be the only colleges that shut down because of partying. You know, like it's just not, that's just, there are going to be many, many others. I would say dozens of others. And I would set the over under at hundreds. Would you guys disagree with that?
No, nationwide? No.
Yeah, like not just in football playing schools, but in colleges and universities. Like, I would just think there's going to be,
there's been many, many, many already.
Yeah. I do agree with what Dan said earlier, too, the dichotomy of like the poor plans to bring the students back. And like UNC didn't have everybody test. Like many schools had, Notre Dame did. I know Syracuse did. And then everybody finger pointing at them. And it's like, no, you're the administrators trying to make a couple billion bucks here because college sports are small business compared to higher ed. I mean, colleges are America's biggest slumlords, right? And that's where they make all their money. So to bring them back with a terrible plan and then point a finger at them when they are acting in what would in normal circumstances be considered typical college behavior, I just think is like a hilarious amount of hypocrisy by these schools.
Yeah. Again, what is the standard? And I get no one wants to give it out because you get locked in, right?
Don't want to be held to it. Yeah.
But I certainly think Notre Dame is kind of a tipping point. And I think if they don't, a lot of people are going to go just because of the way they value this in that runs counter to others. All right. So we never got to this. We meant to last week, but this Big Ten plan to start playing as early as January. Now, we talked. This is actually, I'm obviously would prefer a full regular season. However, this possibility, if that thing actually played, let's say they play January through March, we could be sitting at like 6 months of football here.
Yeah. Right. Like continuous college football.
I ain't saying I prefer it, but, you know, I mean, we also could be getting zero football for the next 6 months. I'm just saying, like, maybe we get 6 months. Kind of interesting. So someone described to me this plan. I think, Pete, you know it fairly well. But, I mean, it involves, like, renting domes, NFL domes. We certainly know, like, the Detroit Lions are not going to, you know, they haven't hosted a playoff game in 28 years or something like that. They're probably available. Ford Field's probably available in January. But, I mean, it adds all sorts of things. Is this just a gimmick to sign recruits in December? Why the heck is football safer in January indoors, albeit in a big dome, than outdoors in September? Even the virus almost deniers agree it'll probably get worse in the winter, which I think common sense-wise, obviously, even a scientist like myself, before my extensive training, I would rely on common sense, but that seemed to apply to common sense. Like, what is this thing? What, you're going to play in January? Is this real? Or is this just, we're totally going to have full classes and everything. Give me your money. I don't.
Here's the thought on that. Like, I hate to disagree with respected, world-renowned, self-proclaimed epidemiologist Dan Wetzel, but I'm going to. I think that if daily testing is available starting in November, December, as it's expected to be, college football becomes exponentially safer because you are testing every single person who goes into your facility every single day. Like right now, like North Carolina has this huge outbreak and then they make an announcement and then Mac Brown's like, we're going to test once a week. It's like, well, that's probably not going to work, right? I mean, after talking to those NFL guys last week, I'm really convinced that daily testing is the key to pushing this forward as safe as possible. And if you can have daily testing for a December training camp and then kick off on January 1st, hey, why not just play in the Rose Bowl on January 1st, right? Why not Ohio State and Michigan play in the Rose Bowl on Friday night or Thursday night to kind of give some juice to this unusual season? Like, go and be creative. At that point, we're going to have a ton of empirical data of colleges playing likely, ton of empirical data on the NFL playing. And you would think, even though there's a chance of a, you know, the flu season-like uptick, per se, in the virus, the better testing protocols that should be available at that time make it reasonable. So I would love to have everybody playing in the fall with fans and everything be back to normal. We know that's not going to happen. So if these leagues made a decision and they can't reverse it because of like ridiculous liability situations. So if they're going to play, like, yeah, go play in these domes. Play on Thursday night. Play on Friday night. Like, stay away from the NFL playoffs. Like, build buzz. Be creative with your TV partners. Like, they, like, people are saying it's impossible. I don't agree with it. I think it worked.
Yeah, I mean, it's really intriguing. The winter virus numbers absolutely should be a concern. You know, I think one of the things that they're looking at here to mitigate their team surrounding is you're going to bring them back to campus in December. And campus is going to be empty, and you're going to get that coveted bubble sort of training ground, and then you're going to go to these what you hope will be relatively secure indoor sites, and you may play double headers, which I had heard some talk about that. You know, Penn State, Rutgers, Maryland are playing in the Carrier Dome. Ohio State, Michigan State are playing in Ford Field. And wouldn't it be something to have Michigan and Ohio State like sharing a dome or a indoor stadium for a weekend? You know, and then you get Miller. You could use Miller Park. You could use Minnesota's stadium. There's talk about using St. Louis. I mean, there's some places out there. It's weird. It's odd. There's going to be risks and probably problems involved, but there are risks and problems involved with all these scenarios. There's no good scenario. So, and I think one of the reasons, first of all, Ohio State is really excited about this plan because they think their best players will play. They think Justin Fields and Sean Wade and some of those guys will not opt out because the NFL is willing to move their calendar to kind of make a winter season work with them. They may not be so willing with a spring season. So it's intriguing. Again, I don't know whether that plane ever gets off the ground, but I kind of like at least the thought process about it.
Well, I mean, I love the idea. I'm just so if the daily testing comes, I agree. I think we've been talking about the daily testing. The sooner that thing arrives, and I don't know. I mean, I was told this thing could be operable this week. Doesn't seem like it. So hopefully soon it does change the game. Any kind of bubble seems to work. I know there was a big issue with false positives in the NFL this weekend. And there was one lab in New Jersey that spit back like 77 or 83 positive tests. And then it was deemed, you know, false. And so they were able to get over it. And there's a panic that, you know, what happens if there's a false positive right before a game and you blow the game and all that. And Matthew Stafford of the Lions, Detroit Lions had that and all that. But I thought the missed bit of this is what I keep saying. There were only three NFL players on the COVID IR list right now. Yeah. Out of 2,600 football players. Now, they're just started full contact, but this, it's not the NHL bubble or the NBA bubble or the MLS bubble or any of those that are working phenomenal. But man, is this thing like they're getting this done. And so if you add a layer of testing, maybe you can do it. I just I think this whole bit would be pretty cool. I think when you take fans out of it, you could do all sorts of things like Friday nights. Yeah, you know, Friday night football in January and February. Be pretty cool. Like you said, there's Indianapolis, Detroit, US Bank up in Minneapolis. St. Louis has that old dome.
Yep, with nobody in
the
it.
Rams. And then Miller Park in Milwaukee. So you have five in the area. Someone even mentioned playing on campus at Syracuse potentially.
Yeah.
Oh, the old Carrier Dome. It's revamped.
Carrier Dome year. Getting rented out. Yeah. But if you have five, you could easily play 10 games a weekend.
Oh, yeah.
But you could play Saturday, Sunday. I mean, once you get into February, the Super Bowl's over.
I mean, look at the XFL ratings.
Yeah.
They were great just because people wanted football for that little window pre-pandemic. Like the Big Ten ratings would crush. And again, it's not the same. It would never be the same. They're not going to have the postseason. But I think, I don't know, when TV was initially poo-pooing the spring, they were like, well, they have NBA windows and NHL windows. I mean, these games would blow those numbers out of the water.
Yeah, and those seasons aren't likely to start until they're talking.
Yeah.
You know, the NBA and the NHL have almost no plans right now for 2021. They're trying to figure right. stuff out, but they are, you know, white knuckling through what they got going now.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get done with that, if they start by February, I think that would be, you know, be amazing if they want to try to reconstruct this. They're going to take a big, deep exhale at the end of this, as well they should. And in fairness, how do you send players back into a bubble? How long can you keep a bubble? Yeah. The dudes are going to be in this bubble for three something months. It's a lot of money, but it's like at that point, do you go storming back to the bubble to play regular season games? Like if I'm LeBron,
Well, Brad Stevens is like one of the least outspoken guys in the NBA, like very calculating, sort of defiantly boring. And even he said in the Boston Globe this weekend, if, you know, whatever the schedule is, they need to schedule people's families in mind. That was like,
right, yeah.
So for Brad Stevens to just say that, he was basically like, look, man, we can't go 3 months without seeing our families. That's just ridiculous. And I do think that there will be some empathy towards that notion.
You know, the other thing, too, though, from a TV standpoint is college basketball games that are, you know, heavily populating the Fox and ESPN airwaves at that time. Those rate almost nothing in January and February. College football games would do really good ratings compared to those. So I guarantee that the network partners, I've been told this, like really like the Big Ten's plan just from their own purposes.
Yeah, and it's not a coincidence that Ohio State and Penn State are leading the charge on this because they have all the most of the high-end players in the league. So
yeah,
like
right?
their own self-interest is driving this. And again, let's hope that we have games, you know, like we are flush from now until the playoff, right? But if we are not, imagine like covering the playoff and you're like in a city and you're watching the Big Ten play a game on like a Friday night.
Watching a Big Ten regular season game, yeah. But I mean, that's the, you hear again, that just the bizarre piecemeal fashion of this season. Why do we have a top 25? How can we have a playoff with 40% of the conferences not involved, including, you know, it's just, how do you do bowl games? It is all so fractured. It's impossible to figure out, you know, it will lead to the other college football national pastime, which is complaining and comparing theoreticals. That's what everybody will do.
I just checked this last year's Duke North Carolina basketball game. Well, I have to say two of them, but I'm just guessing that's the highest rated game. Maybe it wasn't, but whatever. Close.
Probably was. Yeah.
Had the same television rating as the Michigan State Wake Forest Pinstripe Bowl.
There you go. So,
which was played at 3:20 in the afternoon, not 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
So.
Right.
Yeah, like I said at the beginning of this topic, like this isn't great. Nothing's great about the pandemic. But if we end up with January, February, March getting to watch Big Ten football and you're the only show in town.
Yeah. Well, maybe there's Pac-12 football, too. And you're getting Pac-12 after dark, you know, after NFL playoff games. Hey.
Or everybody goes to it and just says, you know, we're not. And I get it. Some of these guys are going to bail. I totally get it. But we're still getting the games. And the idea of, you know, being able to play at different times. You can play weeknights. I mean, you can play anything you want. It's there's no fans. You don't have to. You can't have, like, you can, but universities are loath to, especially ones like Michigan and Ohio State, to say, let's bring 110,000 people on our campus on a Thursday.
Sure.
Like you have to shut the school down basically for a day or two. That's why most of those Thursday night games are smaller leagues or city schools or something like that, if you ever really notice. And the fans don't want to do it. There's so many fans that drive 5-6 hours to go to a football game. They don't want to do it on a work day, and they don't even like Saturday night games. But if you're not bringing fans in, or you're only having 20,000, or you're playing this thing in an empty, U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis, hey, you know, Thursday night's fine. And every kid's doing online schooling. Let's do it. So maybe there's something good here. At the end of this thing, the Big Ten could be visionaries.
It might be. And that's, you know, that I know this. The Big Ten office was, I'm not 100% sure their enthusiasm for this idea was genuine, or if it was A, placate Ohio State, which had been complaining like crazy, and B, change the subject. But I think anything that changes the subject from their mishandling of a justifiable postponement, I think they were going to get behind.
Yeah, I think it was change the subject. That's pretty much where the enthusiasm is. Like, stop becoming a national punching bag. Like, let's move on to something else.
So the Big Ten player rally or parent rally.
Oh, my favorite thing.
Not hugely attended.
Stunning. I am so surprised that all these parents spread all across the Midwest, some from the South, some from the Northeast, didn't drop everything in their work week and fly to Chicago to stand in front of an empty building. I am so surprised.
Yeah, this had a lot of issues. The Big Ten headquarters is not, there's no one in it. So that's, I'm not sure what your protest. This is kind of like voting for Penn State at number 7. They're, I don't know. I see no one in the picture wearing Northwestern garb. I mean,
yeah, located
there's a
right
lot
there.
Of players' parents from Chicagoland. Yeah. It's one thing to fly up from Florida, but, you know, if you live in Bolingbrook, you ought to be able to make it over.
Do you remember during the Zach Smith fiasco at Ohio State during that August when there was like a protest to keep Urban Meyer, and they're like, oh, yeah. there was like more media than there were protesters, yeah. And then the protesters saw the media and they like ran. That's a little
it was
bit
that one
this.
Guy screaming it was the media's fault,
yes.
Wasn't it?
Yes, yes. It always
it's all Brett
fault.
McMurphy's fault that this guy kept getting right. into it with his wife. Like,
well, I guess Randy Wade is going to do an Ohio State protest on campus on Saturday. Have you seen that? That was the latest. I saw that on Twitter, so it has to be true. That is that there is an on-campus rally being bandied about as a potential thing this weekend. So Saturday, this is Randy Wade. Saturday is a protest, point blank period. We want alumni fans, old and current players in attendance, peaceful but full of people that understand we are not giving up. We are here to fight for our young men and the rest of the student athletes.
I mean, I hope the Big Ten football protests wouldn't get violent. I mean,
well, this is just the Ohio State one to protest.
Okay,
the
Ohio
Big
State. Yeah. I would hope not. I mean, really, we should never get violent in our protests. But I understand sometimes tensions boil over and things happen, and you got to make people. I mean, this is as protests go. It's like the seventh graders like storming out because they got rid of the ice cream machine and the calf. Like, yeah,
this is
non-violent.
How long are we going to keep fighting a losing fight here? Like, is Al Gore going to still protest the Florida recount like next week? This decision was made August 11th. And he wants to protest Saturday, which would be August the, what, 3rd, 29th or something? I mean, like, we're going to really do 2.5 weeks. We're still just going to keep protesting this. What are you doing? Find a hobby. Get over it. It's over. I mean, and here's the other thing. Okay. Now, do we have to have mommy and daddy there? If the players who are not practicing, and most of them aren't even yet in class, if they want to protest, get on out there. I don't want to hear from mom and dad anymore. These guys have gone off to college to supposedly mature into adults. And we got mommy and daddy showing up all over the place in front of an empty building to say, my kid needs to play football. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I am flabbergasted by this.
I can't follow that up, Dan. You can go ahead. I can't match that. Sorry.
I really have very little sympathy. I understand the frustration, but in all that is going on in this country and around the world,
yeah,
getting a free year of extra college, I cannot get outraged. Now, if they were saying you're done, you're out, but look, there are kids that work to go to school. Okay. You have to work while you're going to school. And so that's football, but there's a lot of kids on your campus that have jobs. I was someone who had to work through school, right? You lose that job. There are RAs and things like that were counting on free living to monitor the dorms. They have lost their free living. And now college is completely unaffordable. There are people that are trying to get through college as quickly as possible so they can get home and help their family, because carrying debt is impossible or they need it. There are so many kids on these campuses that are not the ones that are just, you know, look, there's a lot of these upper middle class kids that are just partying and all that. There's a lot of kids at these schools that are trying to do something and get through, and they've got a lot of pressure on them, and they have lost their jobs and their living quarters and their entire plan, I'm not going to feel bad for someone saying, hey, you guys get an extra year of free college.
Yeah.
Okay. No. Chill out, lift some weights, do your thing. You'll be back next year. It's just not a tragedy. I understand the frustration, but this is, I mean, there's high school seasons getting, it's just, who cares? It's sports. Like, I feel bad for the kid that's like, the only way I can afford to attend, you know, Northwestern or Stanford is to be an RA, right? Mm-hmm. The only way, because if I can't live in that dorm for free, I now have to rent an apartment in Northern California that is, how much is an apartment, one bedroom, what is it going per bedroom, Pat? You probably would know. What, two bedrooms for what, $3,000?
I'm painfully aware. $1.4 million.
How much
million?
For a month?
No.
A month for two-bedroom
right,
apartment.
So since we have watched my daughter try to navigate this very thing in the last few weeks, four bedrooms, $5,000 a month.
Wow.
Right. Yeah, you're going to have to come up with $1,200, $1,500 a month in rent and more with all, you know. Those are the kids I feel bad for. Now, yeah. I don't, that's how it works, but to get a free, an extra year free, would they take that? Yeah, I think they, sure. I think those RAs would. So there's a lot of people struggling out as, you know, these keep protesting. We all have the right to protest. This is America, but not really sure it's going very far for you.
The Al Gore protest, it's coming back, man.
All right, I need to update us on a pressing story.
Oh.
This comes from Zelon Solomon, listener and alert listener, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
He sent me this over Twitter.
I said we love our engaged listeners who know exactly what our wheelhouse is. That they're our favorite listeners are the ones who are the ones who allow us to be lazy and just let them do the work to find us the news of the weird.
They're our research assistants. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you know how we said that we believe the Guntown kangaroo was alive and found in topping down a street in Fort Lauderdale.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe that isn't him.
What?
Or her.
We didn't do the DNA test?
That we sent it to a lab in New Jersey with NFL tests and came back saying it was a ferret. I don't know.
If we've seen the Guntown kangaroo and Lane Kiffin at FAU, like at his beach house in Boca, in the same place. I mean, is it a coincidence that he was in Mississippi and then he was down in South Florida? And those are the last two places Lane's been. I don't know. Just saying out loud.
Pet kangaroo.
All right. Well, let's just say, according here, reading the Baton Rouge Advocate, which actually now no longer, it's all of Baton Rouge, New Orleans, statewide. The Advocate, terrific publication down there in Louisiana. Photos have emerged of a kangaroo who joined a yoga class. East Feliciana Parish.
Okay.
I don't speak Louisianan, so I probably got that wrong.
Is there
a yoga class?
There?
Go Tigers.
The kangaroo, there's pictures. There's a kangaroo. He's, or she, I don't know, kind of doing yoga poses. There's all these these yoga moms and yoga women there. Like, they're doing their, they're got their little mats. They're all outside.
Yeah.
Doing, it's quite a story. So, you know, it's a lot closer
to Guntown.
From Guntown to Baton Rouge than Fort Lauderdale. Also, this kangaroo is probably quite stressed and might need the yoga to kind of clear its mind, escaping Guntown. So, Pete, is this the kangaroo? Is this really the Guntown kangaroo?
Well,
you're
as
a yoga guy.
As the resident yoga expert by default, although I will say Sully's girlfriend's a yoga instructor, so he probably knows more than me at this point. You know, yoga's really great hip stress reliever, right? If you have tight hips, you do your yoga. Well, think about a kangaroo and the bouncing posture. How much pressure is on the... If you bounce from Guntown, Mississippi to Baton Rouge, do you imagine how messed up your hips are going to be? So clearly, the kangaroo's going to go get in some child's pose, do a little pigeon pose, half pigeon pose, and get those hips stretched out, man. They've got to be taxed.
I think they're all the same kangaroo. You know, I think he went to Fort Lauderdale. He got his vacation in, and now he probably hopped a ferry across the Gulf Coast, maybe even like an oil tanker or something, and landed there at the port of New Orleans and worked his way to Baton Rouge. I don't think it's out of the question. Look, our guy, don't underestimate the Guntown Kangaroo. He can be in a lot of different places. He's probably got sports writer type Marriott points and flyer miles. Dude can get around. It's the same one, all three places.
All right. I know we got some storms coming to Louisiana, so be safe down there.
Yeah. Houston, too, that whole coastline.
Yeah, not going. Yeah, Houston, all of that. So I do want to mention that. Also, a lot of terrible fires out in California.
Oof, brutal.
So that's not good. However, I will say this. This is kind of related to the fires. I'm not sure we should really be making any light of this, but it's interesting. Last Wednesday morning, this is according to the San Jose Mercury News, Chad Little and his family were having a harrowing time. The LNU Lightning Complex fires raged around him, but he was able to keep the flames at bay from his house. The fire was coming close to his house by spraying cans of Bud Light.
Budweiser presents Real Men of Genius. Real Men
of Genius. Wow. Little said, this is the Mercury News. This must be true. Yeah. This must be true.
It's a semi-reputable publication.
Yeah. I mean, Little said he and his family had anticipated the fire reaching their property off Pleasance Valley Road and had already begun packing things up. When the fire arrived, Little told his family he wasn't leaving. Okay, right then, don't do that. Go.
Yeah.
Right. People,
yeah,
leave.
You're not going to outpower a forest fire. That's...
I have two family members who have been, both my niece and my nephew were wildfire firefighters in the West, out West,
oh, wow,
both from Colorado. And that is not something you want to trifle with.
No.
It is a big problem. So, but anyway, I had a lot of friends and family trying to fight with me to get me to leave, but I wasn't going to do it. The Lee said he was going to protect his property because he lost the home 5 years prior and then rebuilt.
Oh.
Although that was a fire in an attic due to a fan, no. So not a forest fire. I was going to say, maybe find a new place. I spent 5 years getting to this point. I'm not going to start over from ground one. He was using fire hoses and fire hydrants, but then the water got shut off. Okay, that's not good. Then I got scared. I was kind of an eye opening that I could be in trouble. He kept raking and shoveling until half buckets of water to defend the fire, but it wasn't much. That's when he grabbed the largest source of liquid he could find in his house, a 30 pack of Bud Light. I mean, probably a little warm. You don't want to drink it. At that point, the fire would have heated up. Quote, that was the only thing that I had a lot of, and it was wet. Luckily,
can't argue that point.
I had a bunch of cases of Bud Light, and I was able to get it out. See that? I grabbed the cans of beer, ran down there. I was shaking them up and then opening them, but it was just dispersing too quickly. He then took a nail. He found a nail sticking out of a piece of sheet metal, and he used it to puncture holes in the can.
Budweiser presents.
When I, this shotgun is an American
shotgun.
When I saw that nail, I would just puncture a hole and shake it as I was going, and I could aim it and concentrate on the bad parts of the fire. Finally, a fire truck came, and Little had a sigh of relief.
Oh, my goodness.
He fought a forest fire off with Bud Light.
He may be the podcast hero of the year. Like, I know.
He found the one good use for Bud Light. I got to give him credit.
I was
very impressive.
Wasn't Bush Light. They wouldn't want to waste the Bush Light. No. You gotta lose the house.
He needed the Natty Light 77 pack, but, you know, 30 pack will work.
And there is a picture of all these empty cans of beer. And a half-burned shed.
My gosh.
If this story is true, I mean, this is the biggest.
It's the greatest triumph for the beer industry in a long time. I mean, it's big.
Bud Light needs to send this guy an absolute arsenal. But I mean, I want a Super like real Bowl commercial.
Yes. Real man. Yes. Yes. Yes.
This guy's it. He is the real man.
Shot it at. It's nuts. I don't believe it's true, but it's not even like this is a pretty good source. There were quotes.
Yeah. Right.
Nick Stastanovich of the Mercury News would not make this up. So
he would not.
And there were pictures.
That's unbelievable.
So, hey, I don't know how your week's going, but it ain't as harrowing as that. Plus, at the end, he had no beer. I mean, at the end of that job, like, you want to have a beer when you're done mowing the lawn?
Yeah.
You really want a beer when you're done saving your house from a forest fire. Chad Little, baby.
I'm going to, maybe I'll advise my daughter and her friends, since they're not terribly far away from there, to just stock up on cases of Bud Light in case, you know, if they got to fend off a fire.
There you go.
Bud Light and a nail.
Where's your joke, Pat? You should have said Bud Light tastes so bad that it turned, a forest fire was like, screw it. We'd rather just go burn another house down than drink this thing. Anyway, congratulations to Chad Little. Yeah. They should put him in the AP top 25. All right. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to our podcast. We'll be back Thursday as more updates go down. We'll see where we're at by then. Please give us nice reviews. Share us on social media. Tell your friends. We will talk to you later this week.
I'm Mike Lizikoff, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Yahoo News.
And I'm Dan Kleidman, Editor-in-Chief of Yahoo News.
We're the hosts of Skullduggery, a podcast that not only breaks down the news, but also breaks news.
We deliver authoritative analysis while drawing intriguing historical parallels from our decades of covering D.C. scandals.
With our current focus on the president and his administration's handling of the coronavirus, to the 2020 elections, we interview those helping to shape the stories.
So subscribe to and download Skullduggery wherever you listen to your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on social media at Skullduggery Pod.